The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have Kerry Long, Program Manager, IARPA, Office of the Director of National Intelligence. How are you doing, Kerry?
Very good, thank you.
Well, there are people who are listening and go, yeah, I know about IARPA. I know about IARPA, this and that, and ARPA and this. So I think what we want to do is maybe tell us about your background and define the acronym, and then we can just toss it about lightly. But tell us about your background and the organization you work with, please.
Okay, well, IARPA, if you've heard of DARPA, the D stands for defense, and I stands for intelligence. So
swap it out, and we got
swap
your
it out. And you pretty much got the same thing, except they're an agency, and we're kind of an activity. But we'll
so
debate that. But
intelligence, advanced research, projects, activity.
Correct.
Is that okay? So it's IARPA, and there's a EARPA too, and a regular DARPA. So several of them, huh?
Yeah, everyone kind of copied DARPA in that regard, I guess.
Yeah.
Hey,
why not?
I
would too.
Right?
Yeah, I would too. It's like, you know, Michelangelo. Yeah. Well, Michelangelo's donuts. It sounds good.
That's right.
And you work the Office of the Director of National Intelligence.
That's who we report to.
And if you want to throw out some acronyms for our federal listeners, it's ODNI. I guess that
correct.
I refer to it. So. Good. We got the person here. We got Kerry Long. Tell us about your background, how you started working for IARPA.
Well, working for a DARPA or an IARPA is an interesting endeavor. It's not like any job I've ever experienced before. Before they'll talk to you, and it's not really a job interview, they want to know if you have an idea that's of interest to them and that you're passionate about. You kind of have to have both. And you have to have an idea of exactly how do you want to accomplish it in 4 years, which is usually the time period they give you, and how you can measure it, which is actually really hard. You can come up with a really neat idea, but if you want an IARPA or DARPA to build a program on it, they are really big into results. So it was actually a 2-year process for me to get hired into IARPA, going back and forth on weekends, working in PowerPoint presentations, presenting to patient people at IARPA, them saying that's not it.
Mm.
And at any point you can go away and no harm, no foul, which is why we get very few PMs in any one time, because it's just such a long, lengthy process.
Yeah.
But I went through it and I got it. So
during my show preparation for this interview, I went to Twitter because that's how sophisticated I am.
Sure.
And you folks have a Twitter handle. It's IARPA, IARPA News. And I went there this morning. And it describes as high risk, high payoff research. Wow, sounds like a startup. I mean, I deal with startups all the time, but that's what they do, high risk, high payoff.
Yeah, even more so with startups, they have to kind of see that there's going to be a profit at the end of the tunnel, a good chance for success. We don't even necessarily have to have that. We just, is it a really hard problem and is it worth taking a shot at? It's success would be nice to have, but it's not the end all go all the time.
Yeah, and what I see some startups is they start the company because they know it's a challenge and no one else can figure it out, and they're going to jump in and try or fall on their face.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's interesting. You're officially a federal organization and you're encouraging innovation. Well, I think this is – you're setting yourself up for success. I mean, the next 10 years, if you don't innovate in the next 10, you're going to be just – you can be outside.
We probably could say about any 10-year period, if you think about it, right?
Yeah, well, maybe more in the last few than years ago. So what brought to my attention, there was an article in Government Computer News, and it talked about something called virtue. And I think my wife's a Latin teacher, so we're all interested in virtue in this room here, and a virtuous man, and the virtuous circle. And this is completely different from the virtuous man and the virtuous circle. It's got nothing to do with Roman history. This is an acronym. Tell us, what is virtue all about?
So virtue, I got the idea. We always have to come up with acronyms or clever little hooks for our programs. Virtue stands for the virtuous user enterprise. The big idea that I came to IARPA with was, is there a way that we can redo the user computing environment, the workstation, if you will, in a more secure way than we've done it in the past. If you think about it, the workstation, we just kind of evolved. And you know what? Evolution doesn't necessarily guarantees you survive, but it doesn't guarantee the most efficient or even secure solution, right? So the idea is, well, now that we're reinventing everything because of virtualization and virtualization technologies, wouldn't it be neat to rethink how users interact with their computing environment? And if knowing that security is important, which we didn't know when we built the personal computer, we certainly didn't consider it. Knowing that now we have a chance to redo it, what would we do different? And that's the big idea.
You know, years ago when I was just learning about technology, I learned about client-server, and that's kind of the dichotomy, if you want to use a fancy word. That's a dichotomy there. There's different antipodes, if you want.
Sure.
And I think most people are focusing on – I had so many people sitting there talk about the cloud this, the cloud that, move to the clouds, cloud security, cloud, cloud, cloud. Well, what about the other part of it is the desktop? And maybe this is – you know, when I my tennis coach once said, hit them where they're not.
Yeah.
And this may be a vulnerable place that people are going to go after, and you're thinking about locking it down or trying to, huh?
Certainly. And we're also looking at the fact that desktops are going to be moved into the cloud. And that's already happening in our organization, in the intelligence community. We're moving quite a few of our desktops into the cloud. Now, it happens to be our personal cloud, but the technologies are very similar to the clouds that people can purchase now in Amazon or Google. And we're starting to wrestle with the idea of, okay, what we do right now is we just take what we did on the workstation where we're used to, and we just make sure it looks just like that on the cloud. And that was another big impetus for me to think, well, if we're going to all this trouble of moving it to the cloud, why don't we move it to something different, right? Yeah. Then the next obvious question is, well, what different? And that's the hard question, right? I don't know.
And so in October, you come up with this BAA. Perhaps you describe this and tell us what BAA is all about.
Well, a broad agency announcement is kind of the contractual vehicle that places like IARPA and DARPA like to use because it allows a little bit more flexibility. It's not like it's sort of like a request for a product, except we don't know what the product is going to be. So the BAA allows us to be a little bit more flexible to scout, kind of sketch the outlines and the requirements at a more high level, but not like a normal government contract. You'd like, I want it to be green, you know, I want it to be 6 feet high, 2 inches wide. It has to, you know, accept these sorts of pressure tolerances and heat tolerances. Since we don't know what the answer is, the BAA gives us the flexibility of sketching the outlines, but allowing the performer to tell us what the solution is. Because that's the difference maybe between an IARPA sort of proposal and another government proposal.
It sounds like a proposal out of Silicon Valley. It's like, well, in general, we're going to try to have this app move to this environment, and we want to see the choices that we have because, no one can predict what the choices are going to be. So all you can say is, and so if someone is listening to this program, mm-hmm. and they're a startup, and they have a lot of creative energy and talent and want to respond to this, where would they go? How would they respond?
Well, go to IARPA.gov. We're the one part of the intelligence community that is extremely open. And we love working with startups, with universities. We don't know where the ideas are going to come from, and we don't want to limit it. So we're extremely open. Go there. There are all kinds of programs we have available. Mine happens to be open right now for submissions, proposals. There's funding available. So I would I'd point you to mine right now. But
and so it's going to close up on December 12th. You got to hop
correct.
On here.
That's right. So use your holiday weekend over Thanksgiving to get working on this. Definitely.
So if you are a talented developer and can think analytically, more importantly, think analytically.
I think
the code's number two. If you can think analytically, you can go to your website and learn this information. It's all about open source, right?
Yes. Matter of fact, we're going to release everything from this project open source. So you're going to get glory from this in the community. It's just not going to go on a shelf like a GOTS product, a government off the shelf software might. We're really big into pushing this out there.
I want to do some time shifting here. Okay, let's go back 10 years when I had hair. And can you imagine part of the federal government operating in this manner? Okay, we have this idea, and then we're going to solicit some answers and then put it up for everyone to – it's an unusual – it's just – it's very 2016. It's so different from 10 years ago, you know?
So I guess what you'd say is that DARPA has been doing this since the 50s and 60s, but maybe they're the only ones in the government doing it.
Yeah, maybe.
Which is why you see all the ARPA rhyming things now throughout the government. Everyone's starting to jump on, right? For us, it was probably exactly 10 years ago, but you see others, HSARPA for Homeland Security. You see other ARPAs out there now.
That's interesting. Let's take a little break. We come back, talk more about innovation in the federal government, talk more about improving security and reducing costs, because that's the end of the game here, is
correct.
That what you're going to do is you're going to come up with a process or a system or something that's going to reduce cost and make things more effective for my listeners, federal IT professionals. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Carrie Long, Program Manager, IARPA, Office of the Director of National Intelligence. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the hot seat today, Carrie Long, Program Manager, IARPA, Office of the Director of National Intelligence. We are trying to build a better mousetrap today. And the better mousetrap today is going to reduce cost and increase security for my listeners. Whew, that's easy to say, hard to do. Sure. And a lot of people say, well, you know, all you have to do is use a virtual desktop infrastructure and then all your problems are solved. That's sliced bread. That's a square peg in a square hole. Go home and drink an iced tea and watch a football game or something. So tell me about the problem we have here. The problem is weaknesses in VDI, virtual desktop infrastructure, and what the possible solutions are, Carrie.
Well, so when you look at VDI, what the big companies like Citrix and VMware have done, and it's because we as users kind of demand it, is they've worked really hard to try to give us the exact experience we had when we had our desktops at our place of work in front of us, right? So they're working on response times. So it looks when I click on something, it responds. It responds the way a desktop would respond. The problem is when they've done such a good job of copying our workstations in the virtual space that they've copied all the vulnerabilities that we've always had in desktops to the virtualization space for the most part. So we're really not any better off, or certainly not much better off than we were before. Now you can argue that patching desktops becomes easier in VDI, and that's certainly true. And so I wouldn't go so far as to say there's no benefit, but
so VDI does not collect security related information. That's one weakness. Is that right?
Well, I mean, certainly, just like a desktop on your desk, you can set up these virtual desktops to collect information, but they don't do it any better or any differently than the workstations we had on our desks. And anyone who's done the security job like I have in the past. Where you get thousands of logs from thousands of machines and you try to dump it into something like a Splunk or some sort of
ArcSight,
it doesn't really help you that much unless you already know what you're looking for or have an idea. So it doesn't help us. It doesn't advance the art of security.
Yeah. There's a dynamic component to this. Because threats are changing all the time. You know, 10,000 attacks in the Pentagon every day. I mean, Terry Halverson over there, he gets up in the morning and in the last 24 hours, sir, we had 10,000, and he expects it every day. And so what happens, they're changing and moving and pivoting, kind of like in basketball, you're trying to get a position, changing and moving, and the VDI may limit you to some of the dynamic response.
So some people, and there's actually a fair amount of work, research is exploring this. You could argue virtualization may allow us to pivot ourselves because we're kind of making this stuff up. This VDI is just a virtual conception of a desktop that we've made up pretty much on the fly. We can tear down a VDI session in a minute or two. You can't do that with a desktop. So in theory, I could create a brand new VDI that looked completely different than my desktop if I were clever. And 5 minutes later, when the adversary tried to reach out to it, it doesn't look like the same machine. So virtualization actually offers up a lot of possibilities. We're just not really taking advantage of them.
So in I'm just thinking about my listeners here. So we have a listener working over the State Department. They show up for work at 9 o'clock in the morning. They're all frustrated and mad. They're about to jump out the basement window by 9:30. And this may have some hope for them. What about the developer? Let's say there's a startup. Let's say it's a Charles startup or something, you know, and they're thinking about getting. So what's in it for a small developing company? I mean, are they going to take and use this code, then hand it back to you, and then it's going to be thrown out to the open source community? Or what's the quid pro quo here for a developer?
So, I mean, if you are a performer in a project such as Virtue, the government reserves all the rights of everything you produce using our money. But at the same time, we're going to open it up to the world. We're going to post everything. And from that point on, anybody, including yourself, because you'll be the most familiar with it, can take it and build products on it.
Oh, it's the Red Hat model. So it's Linux. It's open source. It's fine. But oh, by the way, we offer Red Hat training. We offer tweaks and improvements. And you can use anyone you want. We happen to be the guys who wrote the code, so we might know something about it. So it's
that's
similar
right.
to that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And we're completely open to that. Matter of fact, that's a big win for us. If this were to become a commercial product at some point, or even part of it were used in a commercial product.
So Virtue, V-I-R-T-U-E, Virtuous User Environment.
Correct.
What about Microsoft Azure, Amazon, IBM? Where does it fit?
Well, that's the beauty of, it's what I'm doing. It doesn't do me any good to kind of build this for phantom fantasy environment, and that's usually what we're accused of in research. So I've put a constraint on my performers that this has to run within the Amazon cloud. So if you're going to build it, it has to run the Amazon cloud, and don't make the assumption that Amazon's going to give you the keys to the kingdom and turn over their hypervisor or their underlying infrastructure, because they're not, and that's the case with any cloud provider. So accept that that's a given, and what can you do on top of that to make things more secure?
Yeah.
And so that's the constraint that I've laid out in the BAA.
And everything has a constraint. So
that's right.
As long as it's known ahead of time.
Exactly. And that's in some ways what a true researcher would say, the fewer constraints, the better. The more constraints you put on it, the more it becomes development and the less it becomes research. At IARPA, we have to play that game, because at the end of the day, we want something that's going to impact and be useful to our clients, the intelligence communities, and they're going to be running on commercial clouds, right, or technologies like that.
When I went to your site, that is IARPA.gov, it talks about phase one and phase two of this. So how is that divided up?
So this BA is actually just for the phase one of the program. It made sense to me to break it up to two BAAs. The first one, building the Virtue technology, this environment that runs in the commercial cloud that has certain properties that make it more secure than the typical VDI. The second phase is, how do we use that to actually deliver security, especially with things like big data analytics? We want these Virtues to be much better sensors for big data analytics, which is in the IC. Really, besides providing the user an environment, the second big use case for it is a sensor to see what's going on with the user and what the user is experiencing. So we want to build, phase one is build it with that in mind and the requirements. And phase two is, you've never had this before, an environment that gives you all this flexibility, data analytic developers. What could you do with that?
So the first phase is sensor enabled. And
sure.
In this context, sensor means actions by the end user. Is that what a sensor would be in this context?
It would be the sort of processes or listening capabilities of the environment that the user's using.
And then 6 months from now, a year from now, wherever it happens to be,
a year,
phase
probably.
Two would deal with more with external type analytics instead of so maybe internal, external, maybe that's the balance here. So it would deal with more external analytics.
Sure. So I would argue that you want to minimize the amount of internal analytics, because if you think about it, that user space is your danger area. That's where you're interacting with the dangerous world. If you're worried about insider threat, that's where the dangerous user is operating. So can you really trust any logic that's running in that same processing space, same memory space, to get a little bit more technical? So I'd argue that the external environment's the safest place to do your sort of logic.
And some people will argue that open source code is inherently more secure than proprietary software because it's subjected to the community, which can take a look for weaknesses and update as it is. And so there's a certain strength in some worlds it's called crowdsourcing or strength in numbers, almost like vaccination, I guess. It's like a certain number of people can take a look at it. And so what you're trying to do is come up with something creative and original and leverage this open source, which is, of course, a mandate coming down from the White House. So open source is really encouraged.
Definitely. It's a good mandate.
good.
We're definitely looking forward to it, and it allows us to make sure that our work doesn't just die. That's the beauty of open source. Trying to find the people who are interested 2 years from now in your work is almost impossible, and that's what we used to do. Now you post it, and there's a graduate student out there that hasn't even started his dissertation that's going to find this work and is going to build on it. So,
let's take a break. Come back. Talk more about some innovation coming in from ODNI. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Carrie Long, Program Manager, IARPA, Office of the Director of National Intelligence. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio we have Carrie Long, Program Manager, IARPA, Office of the Director of National Intelligence. And we're talking about some innovation that the government's trying to come up with to help reduce cost, improve cybersecurity. We're talking about a project called Virtue, V-I-R-T-U-E, and we've given some details on that. You know, a lot of people, you know, I go to events all the time, Carrie, and people sit next to me and they go, yeah, I heard that guy, Carrie. He talked about all, how does he keep up with GitHub? How does he keep up with open source? What does he read? So I'm asking you the question that people may be thinking. So, you know, there's lots of stuff going on in open source. It's almost a full-time job keeping up with, I'm sure there's journalists that try to keep up with it. So what do you read to keep up?
Because the space moves so fast, it almost always has to be online. You can go with general things like Register, which is, you know, a tech site. I, for this project, have had to kind of subscribe to different blogs on virtualization, and a lot of academic. I wouldn't recommend this for your listeners necessarily, but going through a lot of academic papers, because quite honestly, that's where a lot of the work is going on that I'm interested in that hasn't quite made it out to the popular press or even the popular technical press. So there are players you realize that are universities and companies that are working in this area. And you go to their sites, you grab their publications, and you follow up on that. Important thing with an IARPA PM, you're actually given a fairly broad support staff. You're given a couple technical contractors whose their job is also to go out and look for things to kind of leverage, you know, the power of three. And we're allowed to bring in federally funded research development corporations and to do studies with them to make sure you don't miss something, right?
Right. So, you know, last night I was speaking to a young man who went to Carnegie Mellon,
mm-hmm.
and he came up with an idea for a company. Now, Carnegie Mellon is kind of a secret resource. There's lots of stuff going on there. A lot of bright – the people I've met from there, I've always been impressed by that organization. You
know? So they actually – they run their own FFRDC called SEI that has obviously a relationship with the university, and they're one of the FFRDCs that we can actually use to, and when I say FFRDC, Federally Funded Research Development Corporation, they're one of the resources that I could reach out to. The one I'm using is actually John Hopkins APL, Applied Physics Lab, which is a comparable. Mm-hmm. So they're the ones I've kind of chosen for my help.
It's almost like the usual suspects that people well know. Like we've known Stanford, we know that, and there's
MIT has Lincoln Labs.
Yeah, so going up pretty good up there, and it's almost like you wouldn't go to, you know, really University of Chicago, but because they have different specialties, but
sure.
Certain organizations are known for certain specialties, and I'm just impressed by Carnegie Mellon. I don't know why. Maybe it's just the last four or five people I've been impressed with. So people trying to manage a cloud for UI UX purposes, they take and create a The virtual desktop infrastructure, because it looks just like my desktop.
It does.
Okay. And you bring the weaknesses with it.
Sure.
So one of the weaknesses, credential stealing. I think this is a can be a hot button for some listener. Oh, really? Well, I have a friend who that happened to and want to learn more. So how does this fit in with credential stealing?
Well, so you have the same issue when you set up your VDIs, especially when it's a VDI based in the Windows environment, the same sorts of pass the hash, which is a type of credential leveraging, stealing sort of attack. You're still susceptible to that. So that's, again, another interesting thing a researcher looking at virtualization could consider and say, well, we're doing that because it's how we've always done it. How could we do it differently, right? If we created a new environment from scratch the user uses, do you have to give them the same sort of credentials? And we're actually exploring that a little bit within Virtue, that the possibility of maybe you don't need all the credentials that a workstation has to do your work.
And this is for an unclassified environment, is that right?
Yeah, well, it can be used in either, but the Virtue program, everything's going to be built on top of regular Amazon. And our performers are going to build their stuff on Amazon back in their institutions, and we're going to test them on Amazon. So this is all completely unclassified.
Great. And if you're listening to this and kind of intrigued, want to learn more about what's going on, the Twitter handle is at IARPA News, and see what's going on. And that's there's a lot of information. I mean, and by the way, this Twitter handle retweets a lot of current information. Here is a good article on Government Computer News. Here is a good article from MIT about something. And so if this is a security concern of yourself, let the IRE, let them figure out the good articles to read. I'll let them be the filter, which I think is the most. And the reason I ask that question is because, you know, you can work 16 hours a day and not catch it. But if it's filtered, all of a sudden, you know what the priorities are, you know what to read and who to respect and who not to respect.
You certainly know IARPA's priorities, at least, right?
So what kind of challenges do you think you'll have in the next 6 months with this project, this proposal? How many people do you think can respond to this? It's not an RFI, it's a BA.
That's right.
How many people can respond and what's the next step?
Well, that's honestly, this is my first IARPA BAA, so I'm actually sort of nervous because you don't get the feedback who's going to apply. So right now, nobody might apply. I have to wait till December 12th or 13th, where in the old model, I'd be talking to people and I'd have people in mind, right? So then I'd be, in some ways, arguing biasing the performers, right? Because I'd be using my own knowledge to kind of self-select. The beauty of the BAA is this is open and I'm not biased. I'm not applying my bias at all. Anyone can apply, and it might probably people I've never thought of. The downside, quite honestly, is I have no idea. So.
Yeah. Well, I suggest you get in the radio and talk about it. And
maybe that's what I'm trying to do.
Get on social media and say, hey, you can be the carnival barker. Hey, come on. Anyone smart out there? Help me with this project. And but I don't know how else it's done. I mean, you know, all those creative ideas out in Silicon Valley, you know, there's 10 ideas and 9 are bad. But you have to look at each one of them and then you stumble on something that actually kind of works. And it's just, it's not a linear process. It's a confusing, follow down a rabbit hole and get stuck. And then you get to, it's frustrating is the word, because you don't know what's going to happen. What's the next step? Well, John, talk to me on December 12th.
That's right.
Maybe we'll find out on the 13th.
And startups generally don't look at government programs. I mean, think of all the paperwork and the bureaucracy that's implied working with the government. Many won't even look, which has been the challenge, trying to get the word out, because those are the sorts of places I want to bid that were different, right? I'm not going to argue that there isn't. Well, I'm not going to try to tell you there is no bureaucracy. There is. But we've tried to minimize it to the biggest extent we can for the government, right?
Well, let me offer some assistance.
Okay.
There is a startup innovation hub called Eastern Foundry.
Okay.
And they have a newsletter going out, and they have 91 companies. They're all smart, you know, chippy little companies, male, female, tall, short, all kinds of stuff, and always looking for an edge and angle. And if there is funding involved and someone's creative and looking for, maybe they're involved in the virtual community, doing something you haven't even thought of doing, maybe something with mobile devices and virtual, and they're going, well, this can apply some of the same technologies. And that's why I think you're going to get an answer is someone who has been deeply involved in a similar related field and is considering maybe it's a different hypervisor, or maybe they're a developer at another organization and looking for expanding their talent set and their capabilities.
I would point them to our site.
Have you reached out to any universities in this endeavor? I imagine you have. You send out announcements or skywriting or what do you use?
You certainly try. We had a Proposers Day back in July, and people who know about IARPA or DARPA know that Proposers Days are a great great open place to come. Problem is I had it in the middle of the summer, which for academic institutions sometimes isn't the best time. But I've tried to reach out. Again, in some ways, your own biases limit you. So we all know the Carnegie Mellons, the MITs, right?
Yeah.
The George Washington Universities. That's where I went. I had to throw that in there. But how do I know there isn't a small school in North Carolina that isn't also doing this? So.
There are startups that are successful in funding programs at George Mason University.
Sure.
And they're gaining a pretty good reputation. You know, there are people out at University of Maryland who focus on user interface.
Sure.
And the logical parallel with that is exactly what happens with the logical interface, strengths, weaknesses, how to address that. So those are two communities that might fit in with some of your plans. Let's take a break, come back. We'll talk more about your project and how it can help our listeners both in the federal community and the startup community. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we are speaking with Kerry Long, Program Manager, IARPA, Office of the Director of National Intelligence. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Kerry Long, Program Manager, IARPA, Office of the Director of National Intelligence. We're talking about Virtue, not your Virtue, but a project you're working called Virtue, V-I-R-T-U-E. You can go to Google and type in IARPA Virtue and find out all about it. Aggressively seeking information, seeking talented people to help him develop a project here that can reduce cost and improve security for the federal government. Basically, we're taking a VDI interface and looking at the weaknesses and try to fix it up. I think it's a good nutshell there, huh?
Sure, and but please don't use the VDI interface, you know, as your model. Go beyond, you know, think creatively, right?
Yeah.
That's the hope. So,
and if you want to follow your organization, it is I think it's at IARPA News for developments and see what's happened. Deadline here is December 12th.
Correct.
We'll talk more about that in a few minutes. But right now, we're going to give you a certified test to find out if you're a card-carrying nerd.
Wow. Okay.
You know, people are, what kind of phone does he have? Is he in the community? Not. Oh, he's security. Well, how secure is he? So here's a 10-question test.
Question.
We'll find out if, in fact, you're a card-carrying. Number one, do you have an Instagram account?
I do not. I work for the intelligence community.
So. That's an interesting telltale sign here. We'll find out. How many cell phones have you just impulsively bought for yourself in the last year?
Well, I've bought several for my family. I only carry one because, again, most of the day I'm not allowed to have a cell phone.
Okay. Well, it's getting a profile here. Do you have a personal Twitter feed?
I have a personal Twitter account, but I almost never use it again.
Of course, I know.
I don't want to expose myself.
We're just getting a profile over here. Do you have a Snapchat account?
I do not.
Oh. What kind of smartphone do you have?
I have an iPhone 6.
What's the most popular app on that?
For me, it's Google Maps.
Google Maps. Wow, I'm getting lost a lot. So we break into your house. How many tablet devices do we see floating around there?
11.
Well, that's
we really like tablets in my house.
That's a good sign. And when was your most recent post in social networking?
My hope is it's almost never, but occasionally I'll put something on Facebook.
Yeah, because of your employment, I understand.
Yeah.
And I see an orange band on your hand. Are you ordering your Apple Watch, or when is that due, for Christmas?
The biggest danger is walking into my space with something like an Apple Watch and then never getting it back. So that's something I never
You'll
want
get appropriated.
To own. That's right, and I'll never get it back. So
the security guard wind up.
I had a boss who got one of those neat pens that remember everything, and for Christmas, and he forgot, he put it in his like lapel pocket. Walked in, he had it for 3 days, and it was never again.
So. Yeah, problem, right? Yeah. And the last book you read, was it electronic or was it paper?
Wow, probably paper.
Paper. Well, you're more normal than nerdy, my friend.
Yes, I understand.
I thought we had a nerd in the studio, but we don't.
Yeah, that's right.
Good tablet number, though. 12 or 11 tablets.
Yeah.
I
read all my newspaper magazines on it. So
yeah,
that's what I spend most of my time doing anyway.
So different when my wife and I watch TV. It's usually not one screen in the room. There's maybe two or three, and we're checking this. And oh, really? Where'd that guy go to school? Oh, really? No, he's the wrong movie, John. Wrong movie, John. He's in the other movie. No, he wasn't. And important topics like that. That's interesting.
Almost never watch movies on the TV anymore. It's kind of a waste. You always watch on your tablet.
Yeah, so. Yeah. You know, this can be very difficult for someone like you, but maybe very easy for someone like you to predict what's going to happen in 5 years. But that is the nature. That's the mission of your organization. The mission of your, not to go to uncharted planets, but your mission is to find out what's going to happen in the future, try to develop new ideas, mm-hmm. come up with something that's unplanned and float with it. So where's this all going to be heading in the next 5 or 6 years? Where do you see your organization heading? Where do you think this particular project heading?
Well, so IARPA is going to continue to do what IARPA does. IARPA can actually apply the model to any area of endeavor. Computer security is actually a really small area that IARPA works with. There are more physicists and biologists at IARPA than there are computer scientists right now. For my area, it's exploding. People may not realize how much the quote-unquote cloud, the commercial clouds, are already a part of their lives. But in the next 5 to 10 years, it's going to become very obvious. It's going to become cost prohibitive to do just about anything, in my estimation, that doesn't involve a commercial cloud. As far as IT is concerned, you're not going to be buying multiple servers anymore for your organization. It's just even in the IC, which you would argue would have the most reason to do that. Even we're looking at it, going, there's no way we can keep doing this. Maintain these huge data centers. It's not when the Amazons and Googles of the world are going to be able to eventually deliver a CPU with 20 gigabytes of memory for 1/10 the cost, and that including all the maintenance and everything. And we're just not going to be able to. So we know that's where it's going. We know it's not secure, and so that's why things like Virtue and their programs at NSF, they're also looking at this now. We know it's coming, and we're trying to get ahead of it. And arguably, I don't know if we're doing a good job or not, but we're at least making the attempt.
You know, when I was born and raised in Ohio, I would put dry gas in my car in the winter because it got really cold. You have to be careful. I test the battery, and I test my battery in dry gas because I didn't want to get stuck, so I prepared for the winter ahead of time. You get even snow tires. That's what you do. You get snow tires. And I think what you're saying is, hey, boys and girls, stop moving the cloud because it's going to be cheap.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, then how can we use it effectively? Well, what's the big weakness? Well, one weakness is VDI. So let's try to figure out if it's not going to it's going to get cold. We know that.
Yes.
You got to get mittens and gloves and hats and heavy socks. Well, this is the heavy socks for the winter here. This is like, okay, we're moving the cloud. Well, it's not all that easy. We, these people are very responsible. And this is being an adult. This is actually being your mom and wearing the gloves and the hat when it gets cold outside.
Well, the company's doing a really good job of innovating to make it much easier to move to the cloud. They're doing Herculean efforts to try to make the transition to the cloud easy, but that the market isn't for security, right? So they're going to argue, and rightly so, that it may be no less secure at the end of the day than what you had before, but what we had before wasn't that secure.
Yeah.
So I'm making the argument that if we're going to go to this Herculean effort of porting everything over to the cloud, let's take this as an opportunity to rethink it a little bit.
So instead of 5 years down the road, 1 year down the road. So where's Virtue going to be 1 year down the road if all the little ducks line up and everything goes according
to plan?
So I'll
actually have performers on contract who'll be trying to build, I call them Virtues, which is the technology. Virtue Alpha, Virtue Bravo, depending on the team, right? Multiple teams, and they'll be building their little Virtue platforms, and we'll be testing them every few months to see how they're doing.
So I would think if you're a small innovative company in the Washington D.C. area and already working in a virtual environment, very comfortable with that, I would think it would behoove you to respond to this and maybe get some funding to take someone off the bench and have them explore this and see what happens. I mean, the high risk, high payoff part of this conversation, it's there. I mean, it's certainly a creative, original way to use code to reduce cost. And it's almost like a high risk, high reward without much of a gamble here. It reduces you're not betting the house and your life insurance and your pension on all this. You do have a net under you here a little bit.
And for academic institutions or people that came from them, we're going to ask you to try to publish something in a journal. So if you have publication requirements for your job, it's going to be part of the task. So don't worry about it.
It fits in perfectly. Yeah. Oh, that's great. We'll try to get the word out and let people know. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Kerry Long, Program Manager, IARPA, Office of Director of National Intelligence. Thank you, Kerry.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.